We love to explain quantum physics and the mysteries of the universe, but the mysteries of finance, not so much. Intuit helps you demystify your finances through products from Intuit like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Understanding standard deductions or interest rates can be very complicated and tricky, with big potential consequences. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it. Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Hey, Jorge, do you have a lot of cousins in your family?
Yeah, I've got a few. I have maybe over 36 cousins, maybe around that number.
Wow, that's a big family. Well, would you be surprised to discover sort of late in life a brand new cousin you'd never even heard of before?
That would be pretty amazing. Kind of weird, I guess, but maybe. Yeah, I would be surprised.
All right. And then what if that cousin turns out to be exactly like you, like look like you in every single way?
Okay, yeah, that's getting kind of weird.
All right. And then what if this cousin looks exactly like you, except they are 200 times more massive?
Dun, dun, dun. Hi, I'm Jorge. I'm a cartoonist and the creator of PhD Comics.
Hi, I'm Daniel. I'm a particle physicist and I do not have 36 cousins.
Welcome to our podcast, Daniel and Jorge, Explore Your Family Tree.
In which we examine all the amazing and fascinating things about the universe, about the big things, the small things, and about how things are related to each other.
Yeah, so no, that's not the name of our podcast. It's actually Daniel and Jorge, Explain the Universe, a production of iHeartRadio.
In which we do examine crazy things about the universe and we try to make them relatable. We try to present them in a way that you can understand them so they connect to topics that matter to you.
Yeah, in a way we do sort of explore the family tree of the universe, you know, how you came to be here, what sort of pairings and fusions occurred for you to be here in this universe, appreciating it and listening to funny podcasts.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons people are interested in the origins of the universe and the creations of our cosmos is because they want to understand how we got here and what it means. In the same way, people explore their family tree. They want to know, where did my family come from? What stories are in our past? What is my personal context? And also, I think it's a useful way for us to sort of organize our thoughts. You know, when we think about the universe in terms of particles, we sometimes think about how those particles are related to each other. Like, do particles have families?
Yeah. And I think, you know, every part of anyone's family tree or origin tree kind of tells you a little bit of the story of the whole thing, right? Like how you came to be, how things work, and how things move about in life.
And other ways your life could have gone. Like if you have a very successful cousin that's a gazillionaire, then, you know, you wonder, could I have made different choices and been a gazillionaire? Yeah. Or if people's paths in life diverge.
Yeah, or if you are that gazillionaire cousin, then good for you. please contact us. We would love to take your donations.
That's right. It would be awesome to have at least one gazillionaire listener. Who is our richest listener? That's a good question for episode one.
To prove it, you have to send us a check. Whoever sends us the biggest check that doesn't bounce wins this little plaque here that I'm just now putting together.
It's made of platinum, right?
Yeah. Well, it's going to be once we get those checks, yes.
You'll get a drawing of a plaque that's made of platinum.
Oh my gosh. Even more valuable from a well-known internet cartoonist.
Exactly. But we do try to understand the world around us. And sometimes that means putting things in context.
Yeah.
And understanding what are the patterns, what are the structures there, and what clues do those patterns give us about the sort of fundamental nature of the universe.
Yeah. So today on the podcast, we'll be talking about a particle in nature that is maybe not the most famous one, and maybe not the most well-known one or consequential in your existence, but which does, I think, tell you a little bit about and told humanity a little bit about how the universe works.
Yeah, this is the non-gazillionaire cousin. This is the cousin that ended up maybe sleeping under the overpass and wearing funny clothes to the family reunion.
Oh, I feel bad for this particle now.
This particle doesn't need your help. It's very massive.
Yeah, so in today's episode, we'll be talking about the muon, the electron's mysterious, lesser known, much more massive cousin.
And I'm biased, of course, because I'm a particle physicist, but I think it's really fascinating to think about how we know each particle is there. We talk about the standard model of particle physics sometimes, but that's a theoretical construct. It's like our idea for how these particles might relate to each other, and that's fascinating. We'll dig into all that. But I think it's also really important to remember each of these were discovered. There's a story behind each particle. Humanity didn't know it existed, and then boom, some experiment revealed it. And on the podcast, we've talked about the first discovery of the particle, how the whole concept of a particle was created, the electron. Then we talked about how we know the photon is a thing, how we know it's really a particle, the photoelectric effect. And so now we're going to take the next step and talk about the discovery of the muon.
Yeah, because, you know, I think that every particle tells a story, you know, and also every story is made out of particles. So there's kind of this really weird, confusing loop there that honestly gives me a headache.
Yeah, this is like the superhero origin story, particle version.
Mm. Yeah, so the muon is not a name that rolls off the tongue. It makes me think of maybe cows, muons, maybe? Muons?
Muon, mu off. I was thinking sort of a Karate Kid thing there.
Oh, I see. It's, back to the 80s references.
Yeah, back to the 80s references. And it's funny, actually, because the name muon is totally inappropriate. We'll dig into it later, but they named it before they discovered it because they thought it was going to be a different particle. And then they sort of changed the name later. It's not a great history for naming particles.
Oh, boy. My favorite topic in science.
Yeah, and so I was wondering, how much do people know about muons? Is it a famous particle, or is it sort of the darker cousin of the electron that nobody really knows about, hasn't gotten the same Instagram attention?
The black sheep, the goatee-wearing particle of the family tree.
Now you're setting it up to be like the grumpy particle that's going to come in with some evil plan to finally get its revenge and its...
You already made this particle the homeless particle that lives under a bridge, so...
Yeah, that was the sad particle that deserves our love and compassion, not the one that's been plotting its victorious return to the center of attention.
Well, you never know with these particles, you know? Physics is full of surprises. <That's true. laughs>
There is a lot of drama. But as usual, I walked around and I asked people if they knew what the muon was and how we knew it was a thing.
Yeah, so before you listen to these answers, think about it for a second. If someone asked you what a muon is, would you know what it is? Have you heard it before? Here's what people had to say.
I'd say it's a unit of measure.
It's like one of the fundamental elements or particle of what makes up everything.
A muon? No.
I believe this to be the name of a subatomic particle. Gluons, muons, I don't remember what classification they fall under as far as the naming conventions.
Some fundamental particle of some sort. It's real small.
Subatomic particles. How do we know exactly what it does?
How do we know muons exist?
Say particle accelerators.
So what's your opinion of these answers today?
Pretty good. It sounds like most people have heard of it or heard of the word before. You know, only a few people said never heard of it.
Mm-hmm. Or think it was a unit of measure, like, how much water would you like? I'll have 7 muons of water.
I wonder though if you pronounced it correctly. Maybe they knew about it, but just under a different pronunciation.
You think I'm mispronouncing the name of a muon?
I don't know. I mean, what's the correct way? Is it muon or muon?
Like, you're making it sound like a Disney movie. Like, oh, my favorite Disney princess is Mulan.
My favorite Disney prince is Muon.
Oh, that is a great way, though, to get more attention for particles in the mainstream. We should get Disney to name the next Disney princess after a particle.
Why not? Why it could be the next Pixar movie. What it's like. What's the emotional roller coaster ride of being a fundamental particle of nature?
Yeah, so much to explore there. And I expect that we will be getting checks from Pixar when they make a $1 billion movie out of it. But I was impressed with these answers, though I want to pick a bone about one thing. People say, yes, it's a fundamental particle. Totally cool. People also say it's a subatomic particle, or it's one of the fundamental particles that make up everything. And that's really a key idea that I think people have not understood about muons, that you can be a tiny particle and not be subatomic, not be part of the atom.
Oh, I see. Subatomic doesn't just mean it's smaller than an atom. You're saying that it means that you're part of the atom.
Remember, fundamental particles have no size. They're dots. They're zero volume. So they're all smaller than the atom in that sense. So being fundamental guarantees you to be smaller than the atom. I think to me, subatomic means it's part of the atom. Like you break it up and you find it inside the atom.
Okay, so we'll get into that. But let's break it down for people first. What is a muon? And why does it sound like an electron? You know, it ends with O-N, but it's not the electron.
Yeah, but it really is related to the electron. It's sort of like the electron's cousin. And by that, I mean that it's identical to the electron in so many ways. It has the same electric charge. It has the same interactions with matter, like it interacts via the weak force and via the electromagnetic force, but it doesn't feel the strong force, just like the electron. It has a neutrino, just like the electron has its neutrino. So in so many ways, it's exactly the same as the electron. It's not like when you discover a new particle and it's totally different, like a quark or a gluon is just completely different from the electron. This one is very, very similar to the electron. It's like weirdly similar, but then with one important difference.
Okay, so it's a particle. I guess let's start with that.
Oh, back it up.
Yeah, yes. Let's back it up a little
it's
bit.
It's not a cow. It's not a Disney princess.
So it's a particle, meaning like it's one of these things that you see in nature, in the universe, like things that pop up and you can touch them and they're it's a thing.
Yes, muons are a thing. They are a little thing. They are particles, and they are little dots of matter. They have mass, and they have charge, and they interact.
Okay, so it's a particle like the electron, but you're saying, and you say it's a cousin of the electron, not that they share, like, not that their parents were siblings, but just like in the sense that it's very similar to the electron.
Yeah. When we organize our knowledge, we look for patterns, we look for similarities, right? Like when we were 100 years ago, when the state of knowledge about the universe was the periodic table, we didn't just have like a pile of different elements and say, here's an element, there's an element. We said, oh, look, this one is similar to that one. They're both really active, or these are really similar because they're both really inactive, or this one weighs a tiny bit more than that one. We notice patterns, we put those patterns together. In the same way, we're looking for patterns in the fundamental particles, and we try to figure out which ones are related to each other. And we have only a few handles on each particle. There's only like a few things we can know about a particle.
Right. And so is this a particle that we can see in our everyday lives? Like, is it floating around? Does it move around wires and electricity like the electron? Or is this kind of one of those weird particles and, you know, you don't ever actually see?
Yeah, you don't see the muon because it doesn't last for very long. It lives for 2.2 microseconds, and then it turns into an electron and some neutrinos. But they are actually everywhere. There's 10,000 muons going through a square meter of Earth every minute. So there's a lot of muons everywhere, but you just can't really see them very easily because they don't last for very long.
Wait, what do you mean? How can they be everywhere but also only last 2.2 microseconds? Does that mean that they're constantly coming into existence, lasting for 2.2 microseconds, and then disappearing and breaking up? Or what does that mean? How can they be all around us, but also evaporating at the same time?
Well, there's two things going on there. One is you're right. They're being created when particles hit the atmosphere. So protons hit the atmosphere and they create a shower of particles, some of which include muons. And those muons fly along a little bit, but they don't last for very long, just 2.2 microseconds, and then they turn into electrons. But they last for 2.2 microseconds according to their clocks. Because they move really fast, there's a relativistic time dilation. So that according to us, that 2.2 microseconds takes longer to click. And so for us, it can take like seconds or minutes for muons to decay.
Oh, but for them, if you were sitting on top of the muon,
mm-hmm.
it would only last, you would only be alive for 2.2 microseconds.
Yeah, that's the half-life of a muon. So a muon is not stable. It's not like an electron. It can just sit there for eons and eons and just be itself. A muon is a heavy particle, and heavy particles like to decay into lighter particles. In this case, the muon turns into an electron very quickly, according to its clock.
Oh, I see. The ones that we see, the ones coming from the atmosphere, are moving fast, so they last longer. But if I just created a muon here in front of me, it would last only for 2.2 microseconds. And it's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. If you could bake muons in your oven, you take them out of the oven, 2.2 microseconds later, boom, they turn into electrons.
you gotta eat them up real quick.
Exactly. They're like making fortune cookies.
Or toss them really fast, have them pop out of the toaster really fast, in which case they would last longer, technically, right?
That's true. Yeah, exactly. Somebody could shoot muons into your mouth. And they would last long enough to get there. I wouldn't recommend that, though. That's, yes. That's not a suggestion for something somebody should do. And actually, 2.2 microseconds is kind of a long time for a particle that's this massive to last.
Mm. And so what does it mean that it disappears or breaks up? Like it's just unstable? Like it just, it's made out of other things and it breaks up? Or it literally just kind of evaporates into energy and that energy turns into something else?
Yeah, that's a great question. These are fundamental particles, so they're not made up of anything else as far as we know. The muon turns into the electron. It's not like it has an electron inside of it and it breaks up into an electron and other stuff. It converts. It goes from a muon, it turns via the weak force into a W particle and a neutrino, and then the W particle turns into an electron and another neutrino. So the muon turns into an electron and two different neutrinos, but it didn't have those bits inside of it. Remember, particle physics is like alchemy. We can convert one kind of matter into another kind of matter.
Okay, so it doesn't break apart. It's just somehow, its very existence, the universe sort of doesn't like it. Like it just ceases to exist and in favor of other things existing instead of it.
Yeah, and this is true for every particle that is pretty massive. The universe doesn't like massive particles. It's like putting a particle on the top of a hill. Eventually, it's going to roll down. And so the muon is like at the top of the hill, and the electron is rolling down to the bottom of the hill. Eventually, the muon is going to turn into the electron. And every particle in nature that can do this does this. The only reason the electron doesn't is that there's no lighter particle for it to turn into.
Oh, and that's why we are able to exist, because
yes,
the universe does seem to like electrons and quarks, which make us up, and so that's why we're stable. But if we were made out of muons, we would disappear pretty quickly.
Yes, exactly. We are made up of the lightest particles out there. Up quarks and down quarks are the lightest quarks. Electrons are the lightest version of that kind of particle called a lepton. Mm. So the matter that makes us up, that's stable, is made out of stuff that can't turn into lighter stuff because there is no lighter stuff for it to turn into.
Right, yeah. There's nothing for it to turn into, so we stay where we are. But a muon is heavy and could turn into something else, so it does.
Precisely. And for those of you wondering, like, well, what about a photon? Why can't an electron turn into a photon? A photon is massless. Well, remember that there are rules about how these things happen, and one of those rules is conservation of electric charge. An electron has -1 charge, so it can't turn into a photon, which has 0 charge, because you'd have to somehow disappear that charge. The only way for that to happen is for an electron to hit a +1 positron, and then they can turn into a photon together. But for a particle to just spontaneously decay, it has to convert to another particle that has all the same sort of quantum mechanical numbers.
Okay, so the muon is the electron's massive cousin, or massive sort of like alternate universe version of the electron, right?
Yeah, it's 200 times the mass of the electron. It's really, really massive.
That's a lot. It's like 200 me scrunched into the same me.
Yes, exactly. It's like if you met another version of you, but you weren't bigger, you were denser or something. You're 200 times as much mass, but still fundamental.
And it doesn't hang around existence very long. It usually breaks up into, or not breaks up, but it turns into lighter particles. So we don't really see it around that much, but still it's sort of an important part of the universe. And it seems that it's an important part of the universe and also tells us a lot about the mysteries of how everything is put together.
Yeah, and it actually lasts a long time for a heavy particle. Other particles that are heavy, like the Higgs boson, they decay much more quickly. They decay in like 10 to the minus 20 seconds, whereas this one decays very slowly. It's just 2.2 microseconds. Yeah. And the reason is that it decays via the weak force, which is very weak. So the weaker the force, the longer it takes for that decay to happen.
All right, let's get into that a little bit more and also how it was discovered and why it is such an important particle. But first, let's take a quick break.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Physicists are famously sticklers for detail. And when it comes to the fine print contracts and hidden fees from wireless providers, I've learned that there's always a catch somewhere. So when I heard that the Mint Mobile wireless plans are just $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, I thought, where's the catch? But now I'm convinced there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online, so they cut out the cost of retail stores and they pass all those savings directly to you. Personally, I love using Mint Mobile. The calls are always crystal clear. So you can say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/universe. That's mintmobile.com/universe. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/universe. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time off to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life to immerse myself in natural beauty and have a unique experience. But you don't have to leave the United States to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. People from Puerto Rico are called Boricuas, but it's not just a name. It's a spirit, a flavor, a rhythm that you can only find in one place on Earth. Puerto Rico. It's embodied by these proud, passionate people, and you'll feel it in every part of the island. When you bask in the warmth of the beaches, when you taste the love in the food, when you embrace the call of adventure, you'll find the Boricua spirit in yourself as well. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. You can forget where you came from and embrace where you are in Puerto Rico, because your visit ends, but the stories last forever. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
All right, so the muon decays by the weak force. What does that mean? How can something decay via a force? Like the force makes it decay?
Yeah, the force sort of provides the avenue for the decay to happen. Like how does a muon turn into an electron? Just roll down a hill and say, hey, now I'm an electron. There has to be an interaction there. And so what happens is the muon turns into a W particle and a neutrino. And the W particle, remember, is the particle of the weak force. It's like the weak force version of the photon. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we mean when we say it uses the weak force to decay. It doesn't just spontaneously happen. Something has to sort of carry that information. Somebody has to make it happen. It's like a reaction. And that reaction always includes one of the forces. And in this case, it uses the weak force.
Right. And that weak force came out of just its own energy.
It uses the mass, right? The muon has a huge amount of energy in it because it has so much mass. And that mass is turned into the energy of the electron and the neutrinos that come out of it. So yeah, the weak force turns the mass of the muon into very small masses of these other particles and gives them a lot of energy.
Right. And it ends up as an electron and two neutrinos.
Precisely.
All right. Well, tell us, Daniel, how was it discovered and why is this an important particle?
Well, it was discovered initially in cosmic rays. People saw these particles just sort of shooting from the sky and they didn't understand what was making them. And they thought, oh, well, you know, we found a few particles, so these are probably electrons. This is, you know, in the early 1900s, we didn't have a really deep understanding of how particles work. We didn't have a good bench of particles. And so people thought, you know, everything they saw, they thought in terms of the particles at the time. So you have to sort of wind your mind back to what we knew at the time. Back then, we knew about protons, we knew about neutrons, we knew about electrons. And so people saw these particles shooting from the sky. They didn't know what made them. But what they saw was that they penetrated really far into matter, much more than electrons could.
We saw the actual muons, not what it looks like after it decays or turns into something else. Like you can actually see and feel the muons.
You can't really feel them, but you can make particle detectors that can detect them. You can actually do this in your garage using something called a cloud chamber. They were able to see them using detectors that they put together. And these detectors were like a cubic piece of film. Like, remember the old way films worked? Mm-hmm. Where like light was exposed on the film. You didn't have a digital camera or anything.
And that made some kind of chemical change. You're saying you can make like a solid cube of this?
Yeah, you just take a solid cube of it. You leave it up on a mountain. And you leave it there for like 6 months, and then you cart it back down, or you ask your grad students to do that. Then you slice it into pieces, and then you can develop each of those. And what you do is you see all the particles that shot through it in those 6 months. And so they can see, and when they did this, they saw all these particles shooting through this film, and they were surprised at how far they were going, because electrons shouldn't get that far. Electrons penetrate in a little bit, and then they stop. But these particles were shooting all the way through.
It's kind of like a bull in a china shop, you know, versus like a mouse in a china shop.
Yeah, and they didn't understand that. They thought, well, you know, are there two kinds of electrons? Are there sometimes electrons can penetrate really far? It was really a puzzle at the time.
Right. What made them think it was an electron? Why couldn't it be like some kind of new atom or something?
We did know it had negative charge. And so I think that's what made people think it was more likely to be an electron or something like an electron than something positive like inside the nucleus. Mm-hmm. And remember, at the time, we only knew basically about protons, neutrons, and electrons. And so everything we saw, we were like all of a sudden having this imagination that we could explain everything in the universe in terms of these particles. And that was it was a great success of the particle model at the time, right? Like everything could be built out of protons, neutrons, and electrons. What a wonderful simplification. And so when we first saw these particles that penetrated really far, we thought, well, it must be one of those.
Right. But it was not.
It was not. And people were able to then later produce it in the laboratory using collisions and all sorts of other stuff. And they discovered that if you put it in a magnetic field, it didn't bend as much as an electron. And that's when they decided, you know what, this must be a different kind of thing. It's like a new version of the electron, a different flavor of the electron, because it must be more massive, which is why it doesn't bend inside the magnetic field as much.
It doesn't get deflected as much because it has so much mass. It just has more inertia.
Precisely. It takes a stronger magnetic field to bend a muon than it does for an electron. And this was kind of a scandal in particle physics at the time.
A scandal?
Yeah. People were upset. They were like, what? A muon? Who ordered that? Like, we don't need this. Like, get out of here with your ridiculous new particle. We have this beautiful description of the universe. We don't want more particles.
Up until then, everything that you knew about helped make the universe. It's kind of what you're saying. Like everything you knew about had a purpose.
Yeah, we had taken apart the stuff around us and found the basic building blocks. And then some people were like, I don't want to hear stories about other building blocks that could be out there. It just sort of confuses the issue, right? It's a shift in the question, not just what are we made out of, but what is the basic organizing principle of the universe? It shows you all of a sudden that there's a larger question you didn't even think to ask.
It's like you find something and you don't know what to do with it. Like it doesn't help you with what you knew about how things work.
Yeah. You're putting together a jigsaw puzzle and all of a sudden somebody hands you like a really big piece that just doesn't fit. And you're like, what? I didn't ask for that. I don't need that. It doesn't help me with my problem.
Right.
You're like, well, but okay, but this piece is here and it's not going away.
Right, yeah. And so it makes you think that maybe there's another puzzle, or that the puzzle is bigger than you think it is.
Yes, all of a sudden you realize this is a three-dimensional puzzle and you've been only playing on two dimensions, and it just blows your mind. And so that's it's sort of an earthquake, an intellectual earthquake through the field at the moment, but it's also a great opportunity. Those are the kind of discoveries that make you realize, wow, there's a whole larger question to ask and there's a whole world of answers out there. Yeah. And of course, now we know there's not just the muon, there's also the tau, which is the even heavier version of it, and that every particle has these cousins.
Yeah, I like how this counts as a scandal in physics. Like, was it on the front page of the Daily Physics News or the National Inquirer of Physics newspapers? People had to resign.
All the tabloids.
People had to give testimony about this, and there were.
Physicists are not that exciting, so we just got to create drama wherever we can.
Oh, I see.
There was even more drama because some people had predicted the existence of a particle sort of similar to this.
What do you mean predicted? Like just guessing?
Yeah, well, there was a famous physicist named Yukawa, who's a genius and won a Nobel Prize for all sorts of fascinating stuff. And he was trying to understand the strong force. He was like, okay, the weak force, we have that one. We have the photon for the electromagnetism. But what mediates the strong force? And he did some calculations and he thought, I bet there's a particle out there about 200 times the mass of the electron, and it mediates the strong force. All right, so that's his prediction, right? And back in the day, physicists would just make predictions like, here's my idea and here's what I predict.
Like, we need this for what we know to make sense.
Yeah, just like with the Higgs boson. Peter Higgs said, this doesn't make sense to me, but if you look at the universe in a new way, then it makes more sense. And this new way predicts a new particle, so you can test my theory. So that was what Yukawa did. And he predicted a new particle about 200 times the mass of the electron. Then they found this particle, and Yukawa was like, woohoo, I was right. But it turns out this particle has nothing to do with the strong force at all. So it's just like a coincidence.
Right. And he still got the Nobel Prize.
He still got the Nobel Prize, but not for this. And not for this one. But he's sort of the reason why this particle has a strange name.
Oh, really? He was a fan of cows.
I don't know if he liked Kobe beef, you know, the guy's Japanese or anything, but he, you know, we had the electron, which is really, really light, and we had the proton, which is like 2,000 times the mass of the electron, and he predicted a particle sort of at an intermediate mass, and so he wanted it called like the, you know, the mesotron, something where meso means like middle, and so that was the sort of the origin of this, like, let's call these particles here, in this mass region, we'll call them mesoparticles.
Wow. Wouldn't you have to call it the mesoon or mesonon or... I feel like just to be consistent here.
And then later people were like, well, it's not really having anything to do with these other particles that we found at the same mass, but we'll just keep calling it the muon anyway.
Right. I bet he wanted to call it the meon after the himself. Meon. Yeah.
The I'm so smart on.
Yeah, but you know, the physicists were like... Come on, dude.
But it's a fascinating moment in physics because...
They were like, is it the muon or the yuon? Is it the muon? How about we call it the muon? Done. Compromise.
That's exactly how these decisions get made. And that's why we have such terrible names for particles.
Yeah. So it's now a well-known thing. Like everyone knows about muons. They know that they're there and you can study them. You can... They're going through our bodies right now at 10,000 times per minute.
Yeah, 10,000 muons per square meter per minute. And you're right, at first it was totally exotic. And what is this weird thing? And now we know it's a relative of the electron, but it also created another field, which is cosmic ray physics. It was the first cosmic ray seen. And at first people weren't sure, like, where are these particles coming from? We know they're coming down from the sky, but are they made in the sky or whatever? And people did all these crazy experiments, like balloon experiments, where they shot detectors up into the atmosphere with balloons and discovered that the higher up you go, the more muons there are. And that tells you that, like, muons are being created in the upper atmosphere, and then they're decaying as they sort of come down to Earth.
Whoa.
And finally, people put together this picture that, like, particles were hitting the top of the atmosphere and creating these showers of particles, and we were just sort of picking up the little last bits of the fireworks as they hit the surface.
Right. I bet they'd also try to shoot a cow to the moon. That's where the inspiration comes from.
Well, you know how the Russians put a dog in one of their first attempts to go to space? I won't comment as to whether particle physicists ever used a weather balloon to launch a cow.
Yeah, they're like, we got to up those Russians. A dog? Anyone can launch a dog into space. He launched a cow.
This is well before the space race. This is the cow race. But I love thinking about what it must have been to be a physicist at that time and to like crack open a whole new era of discovery by you know, putting photographic plates up on mountains and just seeing like what's up there. There's so many amazing things to discover. So many like new worlds were opened up. They discovered that all this invisible stuff is happening around us. That's really wonderful to sort of like crack open a new way of looking at the universe.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the last bit here, which is what does the muon teach us? What does it tell us about how the universe is put together? But first, let's take another quick break.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time off to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life to immerse myself in natural beauty and have a unique experience. But you don't have to leave the United States to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. People from Puerto Rico are called Boricuas, but it's not just a name. It's a spirit, a flavor, a rhythm that you can only find in one place on Earth. Puerto Rico. It's embodied by these proud, passionate people, and you'll feel it in every part of the island. When you bask in the warmth of the beaches, when you taste the love in the food, when you embrace the call of adventure, you'll find the Boricua spirit in yourself as well. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. You can forget where you came from and embrace where you are in Puerto Rico, because your visit ends, but the stories last forever. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
The financial universe out there can seem like a vast place, full of scary mysteries and exciting possibilities, but it can also be overwhelming to navigate, especially when you're first starting out in life. It feels sometimes like just one wrong turn could send you hurtling endlessly towards a financial black hole. But don't worry, you don't have to navigate the financial universe on your own. With the right tools, you can master the financial universe and chart your course with confidence. Intuit helps you navigate the financial universe through products from Intuit like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it.
All right, Daniel, so the muon is a thing. It's there. It's super massive. It looks just like the electron. We can feel it. It's going through us right now. Why is it there? That's the question that maybe a lot of people have. I mean, we don't need the muon to make iPhones or pizzas. So why is it there?
Is that the standard upon which we judge things now? If
yes.
We don't need you for iPhones or pizzas, you don't need to exist.
What else is there, Daniel?
That's my whole life, basically. I just
eat
pizza and look at my iPhone.
Personally,
no, it's a good question. It's a question I'd like to know the answer to. Why does the muon exist? The short version of the answer is the title of a great book I read last year. It's called We Have No Idea, because we really do have no idea why the muon is there.
it doesn't seem to be used for anything, is what you're saying. Like neutrinos, I think, also are there, but we don't know why they're there, right?
Yeah, neutrinos and muons and many of the other particles are not part of the atom. You don't build them, you don't use them to build up the stuff that we're familiar with, but they sort of can exist. They're on nature's menu. You might ask the same question about like some of the really heavy elements, like why is plutonium a thing? Well, it turns out you can assemble protons and neutrons and electrons in this way that's stable and it hangs out and it does this funny thing we call it plutonium.
And plutonium also decays, right? It like breaks up. This one actually breaks up into other things, but it's also kind of ephemeral. Like it's only there for so long before it becomes something else.
Precisely. And in the same way, we organize our list of particles and we wonder, like, why are these there? What does this tell us about maybe one deeper layer of reality? Like maybe the muons and the electrons are made out of smaller particles. And these are just like different ways to assemble those little internal bits, right? And there's a few ways to assemble them. The way that there's a few ways to assemble protons and neutrons to get different elements, maybe there's a few ways to assemble these little tiny ions. One way is to get an electron, another way is to get a muon, another way is to get a tau, which is the third member of that family. We just don't know. We know it's a clue though, right? It's a tantalizing clue that there's something going on here. We just don't know what it means.
It's a clue as to some sort of a hint that there's some sort of rule for how electrons exist. Like if you can make an electron that's heavier, maybe that tells you something about what makes an electron.
Precisely. And why there are three of them tells you something about how that rule has to play out, because there's three electrons, the electron, the muon, and the tau. There's three neutrinos. There's also three up quarks. There's three down quarks. Like there's something really fundamental going on there we just don't understand, but it seems like an obvious clue. You know, it's like you're doing your jigsaw puzzle and then you find this other weird piece. It turns out, oh, that piece fits into a different jigsaw puzzle you didn't even know about. And, you know, it's as you start to get this larger picture.
Right. Or you find that like all of your pieces have three sides to them. Then you start thinking, you know, whoever made this puzzle, if it was made by somebody, had a thing for threes.
Yeah, the universe has a thing for threes, and we don't know why that is. The muon was our first clue that particles have copies at all, and now it turns out every particle has three copies. And so that's a huge open question. It's the kind of question people are going to look back in 100 years and be like, man, that was so obvious. Why couldn't they figure it out? If I was a physicist in 2019, I would totally have figured it out. But it's not so easy when you don't know the answer, when you have to come up with it. But it's important for people to understand it's not, you know, it's not part of the stuff that we are made of, but it does answer this larger question is like, what is the sort of context of everything? That's why we're trying to figure out like, what are all the particles? Because the more particles you put into this table, the more clues we get as to what the rules are for making this table. And then maybe we can peel back a layer and show how this table is put together.
Right. Or I guess maybe a question I would have is, how do you even know it's a separate thing? Like, why isn't it just called the heavy electron? Could it just be an electron that just gets a lot of mass added onto it somehow through energy or something?
That's a deep question. It goes sort of to like, what do we call a particle? Part of the identity of the particle is its mass. Like that's how we identify what particle we're talking about. We measure the mass and we say, well, if it has this mass, it's an electron. Mm. It's sort of semantics, but it's what we mean by an electron. We mean a quantum dot in space that has these properties, and one of those is the mass.
Oh, I see.
And there are only a few. It's not like there's a knob. You can't have halfway between an electron and muon. There's like the electron mass, the muon mass, the tau mass. There's some notches there.
Right. And so this was the first particle that kind of we found outside of the ones that make up atoms. Is that what you're saying? That this was the first one that was weird?
Yeah, precisely. It's weird and cute. I'm glad you're finally putting positive attributes on the muon. You're not trying to make it.
I said weird. I didn't say cute. I think somebody has a particle fetish and it's not the cartoonist.
Yes. Well, maybe the particle physicist has a particle fetish. I will totally own up to that. I love you, particles.
I think we all love particles by necessity. We can't live without them.
You just like particles when they make up pizza and iPhones, though. Otherwise, you don't care about them. You objectify particles.
And cartoonists.
Cartoonists.
Well, I think this particle is interesting in that it also kind of hints, you know, that the universe is full of these small little details that people can't explain right now. And that maybe tell us a little bit about that there are other mysteries yet to discover.
Yeah, and you know, the story of how the muon was discovered is also motivational, right? People saw this weird stuff in these pictures and they could have just shrugged it off. They could have been like, I don't know, electrons are doing something weird that day, whatever. But instead it cracked open this whole other mystery. Right. And we're still doing that. We still don't totally understand the muon. One thing we'd like to understand is the muon's magnetic field.
Oh, it's odd. It has a weird magnetic field.
Yeah. These particles, remember, have quantum spin. So they're doing something weird like spinning that's giving them each a little magnetic field because they have electric charge and spinning charges give magnetic fields. But when we predict the magnetic field of the muon from what we know about it, and then we go and we measure the magnetic field, it's a little bit different. It's not exactly right. And that little difference, we could say, I don't know, shrug it off. Maybe muon is doing something weird that day. Or it could be a clue. It could be that the muon is like interacting with new weird heavy particles we haven't even seen before. It could be the first evidence that there are more particles out there that we haven't yet discovered. And also they help us unravel ancient mysteries. Like maybe you heard about how muons were used to take a picture of the inside of pyramids.
What do you mean? Like we can make an muon viewer? Like muon glasses?
No, we can use muons to like X-ray a pyramid. Because what happens is muons, there's a zillion muons shooting from the sky through everything. And if you take a muon detector and you put it on the other side of something, you can tell sort of the density of that thing. Because muons will penetrate air differently than they'll penetrate rock, for example. And so you take a lot of muons, you shoot them through something, you can tell whether that thing is hollow or not hollow. And so they did this recently by looking at muons that went through the Great Pyramids, because we're curious, like what's inside the Great Pyramid, but you don't want to take it apart.
Right.
And so they use it basically to X-ray the Great Pyramids.
Like you put a detector underneath the pyramid or what?
Yeah, you take the detectors as far underneath the pyramids as you can in some of those rooms that do exist.
Mm.
And, you know, you can't build an X-ray gun the size of the pyramids, but the sky is a muon gun, right? The sky is shooting muons at us all the time.
The sky is a muon gun. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, put on your tin hats, folks, because the sky really is shooting particles at
you. Sounds like I need like a lead titanium hat, not a tin hat.
maybe the pharaohs had the right idea. Maybe that's why they had those really weird headdresses.
Mm. Well, that's what I was going to ask is how do you know what muons look like after they go through aliens? If there are aliens inside the pyramid, you wouldn't know.
Wow, I was so ready with an answer to that question until you went to aliens, and now I'm totally at a loss.
Well, you're right. That's right. That's why right. I'm here, Daniel, to ask the tough questions that are on everyone's minds.
Joking aside, they did find something inside the pyramids. They think they may have found a new empty room inside the pyramids.
Whoa.
That they didn't know about before.
Full of cows.
Because the way the muons... Full of cows. Before the cows are the aliens, actually, to wrap it all up.
Then we're in deep trouble when their overlords come in and they're like, what are you guys doing?
And they say, welcome to our leader, King Muon.
The first
of his name. No, they found that inside the Great Pyramid, there may be a new hollow section that nobody knew about before. And it's only thanks to muons that we were able to muon X-ray the pyramids.
Mm. A muon chamber they found. Thanks to the muon.
Yes. So it may not be inside your iPhone and it may not be inside your pizza, but it does help unravel ancient mysteries about ancient civilizations.
All right. Well, with that, we will wrap it up and we hope you enjoyed that little discussion about this unknown but supermassive and mysterious part of the universe.
Part of our family of cousins. Particles, big, small, massive or not, we love you all. At least, I do.
Thanks for tuning in. See you next time.
If you still have a question after listening to all these explanations, please drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Daniel and Jorge, that's one word, or email us at feedback@danielandjorge.com. Thanks for listening, and remember that Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Mm-hmm. Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances. Whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death, we all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.